Well, thank God we fucking asked. Do you swear or not like your dad, Martin Sheen? And Emilio Estevez said, yes, fuck yes, I swear. Oh, happy fucking happy hour. Emilio Estevez is here.
I do. You know, and my father, yeah, he used to.
Your,
he used to
your
swear
mom.
Quite a bit. And it's actually, it's historically documented in Apocalypse Now. He says,
yeah. Well,
fuck all throughout
that's
it.
That's written.
But he had to say that.
That's he written
did.
For him.
He was earning
he
his
did.
Keep.
But now on Grace and Frankie, you know, he'll go through the script and he'll say, I'm not saying that. Did he tell you when he was here?
Yes.
Yeah, he'll just cross it out. And so Marta Kaufman, the show creator, just shakes her head. She realizes that she's not going to get a fuck out of Martin.
Your lovely mom said Martin's a prude. I have to do all the fucks for him because your mom made our shirts. Trump grabbed me by the country, spelled C-U-N
properly.
Yeah, Trump
Tuesday.
Grabbed my country.
Right.
And so
way to go.
Clearly,
mom.
Your mom's the potty mouth.
She is indeed. She's she's born in Cincinnati and raised in Kentucky.
Yeah.
In a little holler called Salyersville.
Yeah.
And I think that's how they talked over there.
Okay. Yeah. I'm in love with every member of your family. Can I just let's just take a second. Okay, so I ran into them at Lawrence O'Donnell's book party. She gave me her T-shirt. I talked to her and your dad. We all fell in love, not in a three-way, but in a very Catholic, you know, pure way, Emilio. And then she sent us T-shirts, and so then your dad, Martin Sheen, came and did the thing. And I've emailed with her. I've talked to your dad on the phone for 40 minutes. I've talked to you for 45 minutes on the phone. And I said to your mom, I'm like, God is my witness. I will fucking marry into this family one way or another. I said to my friend, I'm like, who is this nice? No one is this nice. You are the nicest people in the world. Forget Hollywood.
We're Midwesterners, man. We're Buckeyes.
Your mom's like, come to Malibu anytime. I'm like, you're going to regret that invitation. Knock, knock. Exterior shot. Stephanie Miller in scuba gear.
She never gave you the address.
She did. She sent me a card with her home phone. Who does that? Nobody. I can't. I don't even know where to start with you. I'm so in love with you. You are, first of all, oh my God, you're so dreamy. It's like, it's not even like what I expected in person with the blue eyes and the whatever. And you're single now. And I'm so much less gay than like 20 minutes ago.
God. Well, we'll fix that.
God is my witness, I'll marry into this family.
This just got really weird.
What does mom say when I knock at the door? And I'm like, hi, I have scuba gear and I'm engaged to Emilio.
She'd be so happy. She just wants to see me happy.
Me too. I don't even know where to start. I first of all, I'm so thrilled about your new movie. I have watched the trailer. I've read the reviews. You just debuted at Santa Barbara Film Festival.
That's right.
Listen, you thought I was going to start with Breakfast Club, and I am fucking obsessed with that, but I'm going to go. Because this film looks so amazing. Alec Baldwin, Christian Slater, this amazing cast, but like
Jeffrey
your
Wright,
dad.
Michael K. Williams, Gabrielle Union, Taylor Schilling, and Jenna Malone. I mean, we lucked out.
Right, but like your dad, you're like... It's this amazing, progressive message while being great entertainment and great acting and all of that. What was this like? So this obviously started young. Your dad is extra crispy fucking bucket of Catholic. We talked about it because my dad was very Catholic and we bonded over that. Your mom was, what, evangelical, right?
Raised evangelical, but
okay.
No longer practicing.
Okay.
That was the big rift in there. In how they were going to raise the children. My dad wanted us all to be Catholic and be raised Catholic, go to Catholic school, and my mom said no. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Born in Staten Island, as they say, with no T. Staten Island.
Staten Island.
Yeah.
Hey.
Mr. Yeah. But wait, when did you move, and then your dad's career took off? I'm told he has a...
So we moved out of New York in 1969.
Okay.
And,
you're my age, by the way.
Right, so I was born 62.
You were 62? 61. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm your adult supervision for this.
You're robbing the cradle.
And we moved to Mexico. We went to my dad got cast in a film called Catch 22.
Yeah.
And that starred everyone, Orson Welles and John Voight and endless cast.
Yeah.
And so the folks decided that after Mexico, they weren't going to go back to New York, that we were going to come to California and make a go at it in the movies. So we got on a train. We went to Nogales. We crossed the border on foot, carrying literally everything that we owned, rented a car, and drove to California. And our first stop was the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. My dad says, because Bobby had been killed.
Bobby, that's where that started. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I remember my father walking me through the Ambassador Hotel, holding my hand and saying, this is where the music died, essentially. This is where it all changed. This was the end of decency. And not really understanding it at 6 years old.
Yeah.
But,
and that was way before Trump. Oh, Jesus. The end of decency. Oh, God. Okay, all right. Let's try to snap back to reality. But you're right. I mean, and I thought, you're right. Interesting connection with your family. Your dad's played JFK. You did
and
the film
Bobby.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so, but I mean, so obviously, like, you had this passion very young about politics and causes and all that stuff. Yeah.
And then watching him get arrested. I think my father's been arrested 68 times.
We tried another one for DUI when he was here, but he doesn't drink. So that went awry. I wanted to be going to the record books, Travis. God damn it.
We do. We're helpers.
If that potty mouth Janet was here, we could have gotten him.
Yes.
Could have gotten him sloshed and arrested for the 69th time.
He felt he had to tell me it was for activism. I'm like, I know, Martin.
You know, one time he got arrested at Vandenberg, as a matter of fact, and he wasn't planning on being arrested.
Wait, you plan on being arrested?
Well, you know, oftentimes he'll go with a support group that can get
him out. Haven't you been watching Grace and Frankie? There was a gay play. They knew there was going to be protest. All right. Go ahead.
No. So he went there to, the crowd had gotten a bit unruly, and he was backing up and saying, hey, you know, relax, everybody settle down.
Yeah.
And as he was backing up, he crossed the line and he went from that to this.
Yeah.
And was taken away in a paddy wagon.
Yeah. What an amazing family. They're in Malibu. You were in Malibu. Okay, wait. We have to stop this, Travis. He made this amazing film in Ohio, and he has now sold his house here. He's moving to Ohio, and I only have tonight to stop it.
Don't look at me.
Because
what do you got to offer?
Because no, but you're
you have been talking to Janet Cheen.
Yes.
You have been.
Oh my God,
it's a conspiracy.
She's so like my mother-in-law already. We're already conspiring. I'm like,
they want to keep you
move
here.
To Ohio.
I know, and you know what? I was there last year from of course to make the film, but I went back in September. Zero to December. I filled up my car one time. Once. It's a walking city. I can walk to Kentucky. I can go to great bourbon bars there. There's terrific.
Right. But isn't it like when you go to Hawaii and you buy that awful shirt and you think, I'll wear this, and then you don't? Like, do you really? I understand you made a really important film there, Emilio, but do you really that you want to be away from me and Martin and Janet, as we call each other?
You know, that's a really good question, and I'm gonna have to test it. I'm gonna have to go out there and see just how long I can last.
But they're from there, right? That you have roots. You have Ohio. You have Buckeye blood.
I do. Yeah, Buckeye in my blood. My dad's from Dayton. My mom's from Cincy.
You brought wine, and
I brought wine. I brought beer from downtown Cincinnati. This is from OTR, which is short for Over the Rhine, and OTR is the oldest historically preserved neighborhood in America.
Wow. Nice. All right, so where do we even start here?
You're on camera, drink.
Okay, well, this is why we have Sean here, because he's, you know, a stem cell, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm 1,000 years old.
What does that make me?
He's like, nobody, because you're like my age, and he's like, Mighty Ducks, that's all I remember. And I was like,
that's not all I remember.
I'm like, Breakfast Club is, oh. I mean, first of all, I went to USC acting school with Ally Sheedy, so like the Brat Pack was... Let's review everybody. Emilio Estevez, Ally Sheedy, Rob Lowe,
Molly Ringwald, Judd Nelson, Andrew McCarthy.
Yes.
Yes. Who else?
I don't. Listen.
Anthony Michael Hall? Was he?
I'm too old to remember.
I suppose. Yeah. Honorary member.
Yeah.
But that was a fucking thing, man. For people of my age, like that was, the Brat Pack was, and how did that even start? It was obviously take off the Rat Pack, which was the Frank Sinatra.
Right.
Yeah.
In truth, the New York Magazine was going to do a feature specifically on me, and I was embarrassed. I thought, you know, I don't want all this attention. So I said, why don't I take the writer with me to the set, to out with the guys, and introduce him to everybody. And I'm an ensemble guy. I'm not sort of like, it's all about me. I really thrive in an ensemble film and an ensemble environment where I can lean on people. Well, the guy took that as an invitation to write about all of us.
Right.
And the Brat Pack was born.
Yeah. Well, ironically, you're like the least bratty of any Hollywood person ever.
Thank you.
Well, and okay, can I just tell you one thing? All right. Here's when I first fell in love with you. Okay, so my brother was a wrestler.
This is blush.
Probably why I'm a junior dyke, because my brother used to practice his wrestling moves on me. I had to go to his wrestling matches. I know how to do a half Nelson. What's the thing where you do this thing and that thing? What's that thing? Not the half Nelson is this thing, and then the
other
thing.
He played a wrestler in a movie.
Exactly. It was.
He played a wrestler in a movie.
32 years ago.
That's my point, Travis. Try to pay attention. Yes. So I figured, I was like, wow, you really did some research on wrestling, because when you took Judd Nelson down, I was like, oh, that's a good move. He really did a fucking.
Is that a half Nelson?
I don't know. I'd say a chicken
leg. I would assume with Judd Nelson, it's a half. It actually looks like a full Nelson.
It's full Nelson with Judd Nelson. You have to go full Nelson.
I was like, wow, he really knows what he's doing. He studied.
Yes. I think I just got lucky.
I was my brother's wrestling dummy. I didn't want to be, but I was just like, ow, okay, right, that worked. But what was the experience of making all these films with these same people? Because you all, you know, I mean, obviously it's acting, but you all seemed like really good friends. And you actually, famously, your dad got a movie camera when you were a kid.
That's right.
And you made movies with your brother Charlie, with Chad Lowe. Who else?
Sean Penn and Chris Penn. I mean, we were all neighbors. And
any talent or just random?
No, in fact, my mom actually saw some of those films much later, and they were god awful. And she said, my God, it's amazing. Any of you ever had a career? They were awful. But, you know, when you're a young actor and you go out on an audition and somebody says yes, you got the job, I mean, you're so grateful.
Yeah.
You're just so damn grateful to have the role. And you know a lot of actors and you know what happens out there. You're going from audition to audition. I think the day I auditioned for Breakfast Club, I also auditioned for a Taco Bell commercial, and that show Chips. And I got a call back.
You could have been Conch. Oh,
Jesus. It's a guest star on Chips, right? So it just happened that they said yes. I remember another. I actually auditioned for John Hughes before that for his film 16 Candles.
16 Candles, okay.
And the casting director, I walked out of the room and I was like, I fucking nailed it. I nailed it. And I'm doing the fist pumps and all that, and the casting director says, hey, yeah, you're not.
You're not again.
It's not gonna. He says, but. I said, but why? Well, you know, you're crushed. And he says, I need you to go. And that was a university. He says, I need you to get in your car. I need you to drive to Venice. There's a British director there. Vicky Thomas is casting this film. It's not this place. It's not this film, but it's something super cool. And he says that I think you got a better shot at that. And that film was Repo Man.
Wow.
But you don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah. You're like, really? Fucking Santa Monica and Rush Hour? God damn it.
And you know, I wanted that job in 16 Candles so badly.
Yeah.
And yet, Repo Man felt like the movie prize.
Yeah.
And in fact, but that's a film that has lasted and endured, 30 some years?
Yeah. Now. But I got to say, it's interesting that, you know, all this, like, talking about the Trump White House and nepotism and, you know, and I know you've had your worked with your dad and your brother in movies, but I'm like going, there's no way you'd have this career. You're just fucking talented, man. You are, as a writer, a director, an actor, I mean, it's just extraordinary, the breadth of your.
There's some shit on that resume.
Oh, honey, I wasn't going to bring.
There's some shit.
I was going to bring up the raspberries. No,
in fact, I think I was nominated.
Listen, Men at Work, as you have said with your brother Charlie Sheen, was you said people have come up to you and said that's the best, funniest film I've ever seen, and you said I question how many films those people have seen.
That's right.
That's you were garbage men, as I recall.
That's right, we were. Yes, where that film belonged, in the garbage.
Aww. No, wait a minute. I've read so much. I mean, seriously, I thought I knew everything about you.
Sorry.
But I'm like,
Sorry for some of it.
No. But it's
any
so
scandals?
Funny because
no scandals,
had Stephen Baldwin on, and he talked about how the Baldwin brothers literally, like, they knocked each other's teeth out. They were trying to punch each other, and one of them punched their mother, and she went in the fireplace. And, like, but you talk about, like, you fought with Charlie your whole childhood.
We
just didn't get along.
Well, we got along. because we lived under the same roof. We had to.
It's like brothers and sisters. It's like you and your brother beating up on you.
My brother hung me.
Really?
Seriously.
Really?
Yeah.
With a rope.
Yeah. What else do you have?
Well, I mean, you know, often we read about bed sheets and we
no, from the banister. He had a chair set up and he was like, "Hey, Steffi, come here. Put your neck in here." And I was like, "Okay." I was a little sister. You're the oldest, right?
I am, yeah.
You'll do anything for the oldest. I was like, "Yes, Billy, yes. What? Okay."
And then
he took the chair away and I was like, "Go get Mom."
We could have lost you.
And he did, in his defense, go get Mom, which, if anything, can be compared to the look on your mother's face when she sees her youngest child being hung by the neck. She's like, "Billy, cut her down!"
It wasn't your fault somehow?
Yes. No. All Republicans blame me. Yeah. Clearly it was my fault for being a victim.
Right.
But he did cut me down when my mother asked me. So what was that like with Charlie? With her? Was it like the Baldwin brothers? Because there was a lot of fistfights with the Baldwin brothers. There was a lot of, you know, like gruesome shit, man.
His
mother ended up in the fireplace with a fireplace poker in her head. Like,
What
is going on with boy children?
I do remember one night Charlie and I got into it. In fact, he's writing a book right now, and he's going to include this as a chapter.
Yeah.
But there was one night where we got in some huge fight, and it was summer, and the windows were open, and devolved into, "I'll kill you, I'll kill you, I'll fucking kill you." And then it was, "Go ahead, kill me, you fucker." I mean, it was back and forth.
Right.
The neighbors, of course, heard.
Right.
And 10 minutes later, three officers. Hands up. You know, this was
Dad's like 30 years ago. This is an activism.
Years ago, right?
This is some bullshit.
I'm not going to get arrested for you kids again.
No, we were home alone.
Oh.
Yeah. And so they came to the door and they said, "We've heard, the neighbors heard someone's going to kill somebody and we're here to make sure that that doesn't happen." And it was very embarrassing.
Is everything okay?
Charlie and I looked at each other and started laughing hysterically. And that's the last fight we ever had. It took the police. It took three.
Because you and your dad both went on his sitcom, right? You played an old friend.
Yeah, I did. Yes, and I died in the first 2 minutes, I think. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So might have been a little passive aggressive something in there, but that's fine. I'm sure if my brother wrote a sitcom, I would die in it. I would die from the hanging. He also dug a grave for me in the basement. That's not important now. Emilio, let's talk about.
Off that note.
So wait. On that note, I just. I don't even know where. So even when you started when you agreed to this appearance, a brief appearance in Mighty Ducks, it was in exchange for Disney helping you finance and distribute the War at Home film about veterans that dad started. So you were always like, you and your dad are amazing and you had these amazing careers. And yet this sort of moral center, whether it's West Wing or, you know, the stuff you've done, it's almost like you do this other stuff to fund your activism.
Well, I'm still trying to make up for Men at Work.
There's no need.
Well, clearly there is. You brought it up.
I love the review.
Thanks,
one guy. One guy said,
"Our first walk out of happy hour.
It's the funniest film I've ever seen."
First walk out of happy hour. Thanks, Steph. Men at Work.
I need the publicity. If I can't get Martin Sheen a DUI, I gotta get Emilio Estevez to walk out.
Walk out.
So wait, right? Because you, as a director, you wait a minute. You also were the youngest writer director ever of a major film.
You
want
to bring that one up too? I get it.
But
it's a terrible film.
My point
is terrible
wisdom.
Film.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, thank you.
No,
thank
but you were a baby. You were just a baby.
I was 23.
You're a baby.
I was surrounded by the most amazing crew. Danny Elfman was my composer.
Oh, wow.
Dennis Gassner was my production designer, who's gone on to win I don't know how many Oscars since then. Adam Greenberg, who just shot The Terminator, was my cinematographer.
Right.
Bernard Williams was the producer who worked with Kubrick on Barry Lyndon and Clockwork Orange. Michael Caan was my editor, who cuts everything that Steven's done since Close Encounters. The script was shit.
Yeah.
Robert Wise was my executive producer.
Wow.
The editor of Citizen Kane and Magnificent Emerson. So I had this phenomenal support group, but I was 23.
Yeah.
And I thought, hey, I know what I'm doing better than all these people. Robert Wise is not going to tell me what to do.
Fuck you. Fuck you, mister. I'm 23.
He only directed Sound of Music and West Side Story. What the hell does he know?
Can we talk about when you were 14? You went to the Philippines with your dad, Martin Sheen, shooting Apocalypse Now, so you had a role as an extra.
Mm-hmm.
And your scenes were cut. God damn it. God damn it. What happened? Wait, who's the actor was pulling you out of?
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes! Lawrence Fishburne was pulling you out of.
Well, no, that was a separate issue. Lawrence, the day I met Fishburne, we were both 14 on that film. And he said, well, let's go. And we were staying on a house some hotel that was on a lake. And he said, well, let's go in the boat. Let's go take a trip in the. And I said, sure. You know, you're 14 years old. Somebody said, let's go for a little boat. And the engine broke down. And we started drifting to the shore. And I said, well, I'll jump out and I'll push us away from the shore. And maybe we can get this engine started again. And it was like quicksand. And I started to go down. And Fishburne reached in. Then he saved my life. And, of course, we didn't tell my parents about it. Because
they're going to be real surprised when they hear this podcast.
Who hasn't been saved by Lawrence Fishburne?
and he and I bonded, of course. Because you do in that instance.
Yeah. But so you were an extra. God damn it.
I was an extra later on. It was a Do Lung Bridge sequence. And they had us train for about 3 weeks while they were shooting other footage. And then there was 20 of us who were, some had a line here, a line there. And we shot it. And I had one line where I said, medic, get a medic over here right now. Somebody got shot next to me. And Francis decided that I was just not ready for
Francis Coppola. Where's his fucking body of work?
What does he know?
But to his credit, he did cast me in The Outsiders a few years later.
I've heard of that film.
Yes.
Oh, see, and I thought maybe that you were a soldier that died. I thought you could reenact it for us since you ended up on the cutting room floor.
No, I was screaming.
Get a medic.
Yeah,
okay.
Get a medic.
Yeah, all right. Well, I can see why he cut that. All right.
Stephanie.
Yes.
This is how
just
we
kidding. Live. Not, I'm kidding.
I'm
kidding.
Not helping with bookings.
Now, what? But here's the other thing your dad talked about is how proud of he was of you that you didn't ever, you kept your name.
It was a huge
fight. Which is his name, Estevez.
Huge fight.
But he was saying in his generation, like, I don't know if he would have been Martin Sheen if he'd had a Hispanic surname, but he was proud of you that you.
Well, you have to remember in 1958.
But 1958. Sure, I don't remember Emilio, but thank you.
But from a historical context, you of course remember.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The Puerto Ricans were being blamed for everything in New York. And so my dad with this, his real name is Ramon Estevez. And the casting director said, dude, what? You don't look anything like, you don't look Puerto Rican. And so he decided, hey. But even in 1979, 1980, when I started going out on auditions, casting directors and managers and agents here in this town would say, you know, you have the Sheen name. You should use it. You don't look Hispanic. And my dad and I had that conversation. He said, don't make the same mistake I did.
Yeah.
I made other mistakes.
That he did. Was there any discussion between you and Charlie or your dad why he chose to keep it and you didn't? Or it just was personal decision?
Charlie takes shortcuts. Oh, what? Did I just
do
what?
Not use that clip to sell
not,
this.
No.
Do not. Travis.
I'm editing it out.
God damn it, Travis. Don't.
Carlos Estevez, you're not fooling anybody. Fucker.
You fucker. So, can we, all right, let's talk about the whole, the 80s, because obviously, like you said, the Outsiders. I'm trying to like remember the whole, because it was fast, man. I don't know if I'm sure it seemed as fast and blinding as you, as it did to the rest of us, because it was like Outsiders, Repo Man, Breakfast Club, San Elmo's Fire. That was then, this was now.
Young Guns is in there too, somewhere.
Young Guns was in there.
1988 was Young
Stakeout,
Guns.
Stakeout, Young Guns, right.
It was a really good time to be a young actor in this town. I mean, they couldn't make movies fast enough, and you know, which is why so many of them are forgettable. I was very fortunate to be in movies that have lasted throughout, you know, across generations.
You probably get asked this all the time. Do you have favorites? Was there a favorite experience in filming, whether it was St. Elmo's Fire or Rat Pack or, you know, or excuse me, Breakfast Club or, I mean, did you, you know what I'm saying? Like, it that looked to us to be so much fun.
Right.
What was it like?
You know, I always remember all the anecdotes when I'm in the car driving away. It's like, damn it!
God damn
it.
Why
did you tell that story?
And I'm laughing.
Ally Sheedy really did eat sugar and paste. Just kidding. No, I went to USC at the theater school with her and Eric Stoltz. Yeah, and Anthony Edwards all at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm like, they'll never be anything. They'll end up in their basement.
Oh.
Emilio. No, they were wildly talented then, and they still are. But so what? But was the experience fun at all? Like, people always wonder, like, what was that like?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure they were fun. It was one of the things that doesn't happen now, which happened, which was sort of the norm when we were, is there would be 2 or 3 or 4 weeks of rehearsal.
Right.
In the case of Young Guns, they would take us out and have us do horseback and riding training and shooting training.
Yeah.
So that doesn't happen anymore. Oftentimes, and the same could be said even for the public, which is what the film we just did.
Yeah.
You're meeting actors for the first time on the set.
Yeah.
You've had maybe a conversation with them prior to them arriving and talked about the character. They've read the script. They've agreed to do it. And now they show up on set in hair and makeup and wardrobe and, hey, how you doing? I lose that those 2 weeks. I really missed those 2 weeks where you could get together and work and really workshop the movie before you put it in front of the camera.
But in the case of Breakfast Club, St. Elmo's Fire, like, as you became actual friends with those people, was it easier? Was it harder? Was it in an acting sense?
I think what happens is when you're on location, especially, you're with a group of people, everybody gets very close, and then everybody goes off to do other films, and they go all over the country or the world. And I think, I guess we sold it well. We sold the friendships well. They didn't particularly last years and years.
Yeah.
But
Demi Moore, though, you were you did Wisdom with Demi Moore.
Right. We were engaged.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
We were engaged. Yeah.
Did Rob Lowe know? No, I'm just kidding.
No, but
so
but I'll tell you.
But
there's an Alec Baldwin component to this.
Oh,
what?
Very funny. This is
who's in your new movie?
And Alec doesn't even know this story.
And Alec's in his latest film.
Alec does not know this story.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Juicy gossip.
So, do not use this clip.
This is the clip to sell the show. This is the clip to sell the show.
Alec Baldwin does not know the truth of how he came to be known by me. And that is, there was a bunch of us. There was a group of us. It was, you know, Tom Cruise and Sean Penn. So we were all be up for the same roles and... We'd fight it out, and someone would get the offer, and someone would be in waiting. If that person passed, then you'd step in, and so we were all sort of kind of interchangeable for a moment. Along comes Alec Baldwin.
Right,
he's 6 foot something. He's
that
ridiculously
fucking,
handsome. He's a wonderful actor, and the whole town is abuzz. All you're hearing is Alec Baldwin, Alec Baldwin, Alec Baldwin.
You and Tom Cruise are out slamming tequila.
Who's this
dick?
Fucking Baldwin
He's a
guy.
Dick. He's too tall.
Right. So Demi and I are engaged. She has she's living in a little bungalow that she owns in West Hollywood, and she has to go to the dentist and leaves me home alone at her house just sort of for the afternoon.
Right.
Do you remember the days when we used to have the little... phone answering machines. And
sure.
You had the volume up.
So you can hear it.
Of screen calls.
Hi, Demi, it's Alec Baldwin. Right. Beep. Oh, I love this story. Go ahead.
The phone rings. The volume's on. Hello, Demi. It's Alec Baldwin. And he's going on. And I don't know what I don't know what the relationship is after that point, but I'm her fiance.
Did you pick it up? It's Emilio.
No.
Activision.
No.
No?
No.
No.
I walked over the machine and I said, interesting. Hmm. Alec Baldwin just called. Interesting. Hmm. Huh. Erase. I hit the erase. And I felt like I had just given him some right
like
hook.
Cold cocked him.
I knocked Alec Baldwin flat.
Yeah.
He's out.
Overly tall.
Done.
Motherfucker.
To this day, I don't know if she ever heard the message or he ever called back. Years later, Ally Sheedy calls me. She says, "Hey, I'd like to, you know, I was renting a little house on the beach," and she said, "Hey, I'd like to come by and see about I'm with a friend, and is it okay? And she didn't say who it was. Hey, it's Allie. I open the door, and
oh,
it's Allie.
Shit. Oh, shit.
And I'm just staring at him, and I'm thinking, does he know? So far, I'm not. He hasn't hit me. I haven't hit him. Demi and I had split up at that point.
Right.
But to this day, I haven't told him that story. And he ended up being the sweetest guy.
Yeah.
He stayed all afternoon. We ate. I cooked dinner for him. It was an amazing day. And I remember.
You're like Mr. Big and what's his name in Sex and the City now. You're best friends.
We are now. But at the time, I felt so guilty. I was so mortified. I thought, he's so nice. How could I have erased
his
message?
He's nice. I love him as an actor. I love him as politically. But he has stiffed me twice for sexy liberal. So fuck him. I'm totally on your side until he does happy hour. And then I'll be like, fuck you.
He just had hip surgery yesterday. So,
did he really?
Did he use that as an excuse?
I will go lick his hip well. He will come do happy hour.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't even know what it means either.
Well, it sounds...
That's the greatest story ever.
Well, it's
in the history of ever.
That's
and so now he and I have been friends. He worked on the film last
right.
we shot last January 2017. He's texted me all the time.
Right.
It's a love fest.
Right.
I still haven't told him the story.
Okay, can you that's how we get Alec Baldwin on the happy hour. Just say,
"Hey Alec.
We have a story from Mill you've never heard it before. You want to hear it. Just come on.
Come in. Come see us."
All right.
But who's guilty? So, is it Alec or is it Demi? Who's guilty?
Can es mas
guilty?
It depends on who comes and does a happy hour with us first.
Can es mas jore? Can we get Demi? Then totally Alec Baldwin.
We're team Demi if she comes in. If Alec comes in.
Well, you don't know. Was he just trying to pick her up or was there something going on? You don't know.
We at this point, we don't know.
Yeah, because he always sounds like he's just about to come. So you never know. It's like, it's Alec. Right? Like, you don't know. What the fuck's going on with him?
Stephanie.
Is he calling to check in or is he calling for phone sex? Either way, I'm happy
You've
to hear
had
from
an
him.
Interesting romantic history, obviously, famously married to Paula Abdul. Now, straight up, tell me, did you really think you were going to be with her forever?
Wow.
What?
What?
Did you not think I was going to go there? Straight up, tell me.
No.
How was it?
No.
What?
It was.
Was there
two
an
steps
animated
forward,
cat? Was,
three
now,
steps
was,
back.
Now, was that cheating thing an animated cat? Was Scat Cat involved in that? Sorry.
No.
I crack himself
you know what?
Up.
You know what's interesting? It's I had a great
yes.
Two
you
years.
Actually,
she and I were.
You're
we're
really good friends with Demi Moore's too. You're obviously a good guy.
We are. And Paula and I, we were married for 2 years, and I hadn't seen her in 7, which is odd. You know, you're in this town. You figure you're going to run into somebody. You're going to bump into them somewhere.
Sure.
And the only time I came out of a bathroom in a restaurant, and she was there.
Wow.
And that
awkward.
Was it. And I've seen it was a bit awkward.
Awkward.
And that was the only time that I have seen her since we divorced.
Wow.
1994.
Wow. Yeah. But it was okay. It was
fine. She was lovely. And I and
did she choreograph it? You go that way. I'll go this way. Twyla, Fozzie. Okay. That's a choreographer joke. I'm enjoying this. I don't know if he is. Okay. Now.
More wine.
He's getting red again.
He brought wine. It's his fault. He brought me all this wine from Ohio.
And Cincinnati beer.
Oh, my God. It's fantastic.
Yes. Rheingeist beer. And can I just.
Yes.
Flip the tables on this?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Can I just say what a fan I am?
Oh my God! Okay, this is going to be an after party for the ages.
It's so surreal to be sitting here. I mean, I've followed the show for so long.
That was weird. He walked in. He's like, "Oh my God, Travis, Sean!" I was like, "Wait,
I know,
what?"
He's really
what?
I had when I lived in a hotel in Santa Monica last year. I had this. I carried this. I read it.
My
well,
LA
I read the first
cover.
Couple of paragraphs, but then
thank God you and no one in your family's ever gotten any publicity, so I can see how that was overwhelming for you.
I was so happy when I saw it. I thought,
oh, thank you.
Finally.
No, you and your
I'm not crazy.
And Dad.
She is that good. They are that good. I miss Vanessa.
No, that's okay.
No, that's okay.
No,
she and I were Facebook
buddies. We're all family.
Vanessa and I were Facebook buddies.
Chris is coming back.
Will you friend me?
Yes, I will.
Even though Jim Carrey said not to, Didn't he say, shouldn't we all dump our Facebook account?
Screw Jim Carrey.
Yes, yes, yes. No, Chris is coming back next week. We're all family.
I don't care what Jim Carrey says. He had me thrown off a set.
Wait, what?
What?
Story time.
Anyway. We're talking about you.
Why, no, why did he have you thrown off a set? I don't. What'd you do? What did you do, Emilio?
Emilio?
We'll talk about that later. But no, I was singing your praises.
Wait, and Jim Carrey doesn't like me? Wait, what? Wait,
Jim Carrey's telling all of us to dump our Facebook accounts.
Oh, I see. Okay, let's move on. Now, I didn't even realize you not only were in Apocalypse Now at 14, you were in an episode of The West Wing right. As a younger version of your dad's character. You were Jed Bartlett.
Featured on a TV in the deep, deep, deep background.
Okay. All right.
I still get residuals.
Oh, well, that's the important thing. Thank you, Daddy. Also, close personal friend of Bon Jovi. You were in his music videos. He was in Young Guns, etc.
That's right.
How did that happen?
I was a fan of that song that he wrote called Wanted Dead or Alive, and we listened to it during the first Young Guns. And you know, Ali Sheedy's like patient zero. She's she was friendly with...
And me too, from USC Theater.
She was friends with John and Richie Sambora, and she introduced John and I. And John says, "Hey man, you know I love Young Guns 1. Can I be involved with Young Guns 2?" I said, "Yeah, why don't you come out to New Mexico and we'll throw you in and do a cameo." He shows up in the middle of shooting and he says, "Hey, I wrote a song and I'd love to play it for you." And I said,
"Oh my God, whatever,
sure, you know."
How good
knows
could it
what
be?
He's, doing. He's like. Can I play it for you now? And he had it written on a piece of lined notebook paper, and he sat down and played it on guitar, and it was Blaze of Glory.
Wow.
And I had the day off, and I said, get in the car. We drove to set. I said, there's the director and producers. Go in there and play it for them, and he did. And he was nominated for an Oscar. I think he won the Golden Globe for the song. And,
yeah.
An entire album was born out of... Out of that experience. So yeah, he and I have been friends for a while, and that was I think that was his first solo album, wasn't it?
Wow. Yeah, there's so many interesting fun cut. You were the best man at Tom Cruise and Mimi Rogers' wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did that seem like it was going to work out?
It did.
It did. Okay.
I mean, don't they all?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
you're rooting for people. I mean, I hope that people were rooting for me when I got married, but
well. Yes.
But you're happily single now.
I am happily single. Yes.
Stephanie won't
forget
that.
Things are looking up for mama. now, wait a minute. You have kids. You have two kids. How old?
I have two adults. Carrie
Sally, a Wilhelmina model. Okay, well, Listen, can you make the lighting a little darker in here?
My son is 33.
No!
I'm 34 years.
Fucking way.
My daughter's 32. I have adults. I have adult children.
You spawned adults. Wow. And so, wait a minute. So,
I started very, very obviously.
Wow.
Very young, and I just learned how to tie my shoes, and I said, "You're what?"
So, what do they do, and where are they? Where are your kids?
They're here. They live in LA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
My son is a stuntman.
Oh! Nice.
Stunt coordinator, stuntman.
Interesting.
He worked on The Public with me, and my daughter is a drummer.
Oh wow!
And she and her partner, her wife, live in
Wait, you just changed things for
they have
Stephanie.
Okay, all right. Wait, they have gays in the family. Everybody, hang on.
Now Stephanie's like, wait,
gays in the family.
Why Emilio when I have his daughter?
Because she has a partner. Are you paying attention? She's way too young for
that
me.
That wouldn't stop her.
Listen, wow. Yes, it would. I'm in love with Emilio now.
This is turning into unhappy hour.
No.
Sorry. Shut up.
No, it's not.
Shit's going to start flying.
Stop fucking harshing my buzz, motherfucker. So wait. No, yes. I just love that you were... So when you were engaged to Demi Moore, you remained good friends. Mm-hmm. You starred as a feuding married couple in the movie Bobby alongside Ashton Kutcher, who was at the time real-life husband.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's all so messy in Hollywood, isn't it, Emilio? It's all...
I'll tell you what. Paula, just because she and I don't see each other, but I have nothing but good things to say about her and great thoughts. But I'm friends with all of my exes.
Yeah, yeah. Me too, mostly, just, except for the really crazy one. Except for the felony.
You never
one.
Want to walk into a restaurant and say,
Uh-oh, I gotta go.
Right?
Okay, here's the other reason I'm in love with you. You make wine in your own vineyard?
I did. When that did, was...
What? Huh? We could be so happy.
She's back on Team Emilio now. She's totally back on your team.
That's the thing that brings me back over the line.
My,
she's straight. Yeah, she's into wine.
Okay, can I just say, though... Because I told your mom I'm already in love with your husband and now your son. I apologize. I know it's messy. But one of the things you said in an interview, you said, the most significant thing my father taught me is my job is no more or less important than someone else's. And
what bullshit?
He's full of shit. But, like, that seems like that's the way you guys have, you know, lived your life. Like, you know... Just like fighting for the working man and the guy. That's what your new film's about. Hang on. You used to Google your name and see what came up, and then it hurt a lot? Because...
Yeah, that was back in the day.
Oh, okay.
I don't anymore. I just now expect it. I expect the haters. I mean, that's an old quote. That's before haters started hating.
Well, no one should hate you. You are the fucking stuff of life. But let's talk about your new film, because it's like a outgrowth of everything you've been and done in your life, and the trailer looks so amazing, and it's starring Alec Baldwin and Christian Slater. It's called The Public, and it takes place in the Public Library of Cincinnati.
That's right.
Where you're the head librarian there. The library represents a place of community where rich, poor, young, old, homeless alike exercise their constitutional right to access information. The library also serves as a secondary purpose for the homeless population of Cincinnati, to shelter them from the elements. So there's a cold snap coming. Obviously the trailer, homeless guy that you knew as your character dies. Tell us how this whole thing started, because it's just an amazing film. I mean, from what I can see from everything, the trailer and all the reviews.
Well, this started 11 years ago. There was an article in the LA Times written by a former Salt Lake City librarian named Chip Ward. And Chip was retiring because he got to a place where he said, I'm no longer just a librarian. I'm a frontline first responder.
Yeah.
That is my job now. And libraries are de facto homeless shelters. And I'm overwhelmed. And I spend the bulk of my day not doing what I went to library school for. I have this degree in library science, and it's useless. Not useless, but
yeah.
But compared to what he thought he would be doing, it was far, far from it. And so the article talked about how that this is epidemic. Now, I had done a lot of research for Bobby at the downtown public library, almost all my research, and I spent months there in the basement in where the archives are, and it's all on microfiche.
Yeah, fiche.
Right. So, and I knew exactly what Chip Ward was talking about. I knew these people, and I finished reading the article, and I said, this is the next picture I want to make.
Yeah.
I want to write the script. I want to celebrate librarians. I want to celebrate the institution of libraries, and we take them for granted. Because most people have access to computers and cell phones, but most people don't, actually. The truth is, most people don't.
Yeah.
Our friends do. People we know do.
Yeah.
But if your access to a computer, which is limited to maybe 2 hours in the day, you have to get every. You have to look for a job.
Yeah.
You have to write your family, tell them you're still alive. You maybe the a source of entertainment, watch a movie, catch up on news, and then you're off the computer and you're out the door, or finding yourself in a corner with a book. And so I wanted to tell the story. It was originally going to be set here in L.A. And I thought, you know, we really don't have the cold snaps that they do in the Midwest.
I love this interview. You said it's originally meant to be set in L.A., L.A. Public Library. They said, we haven't had a film crew in here since the last one almost set the whole building on fire and those sprinklers went off. Right. And I said, what production was that? And they said, well, it was the West Wing.
Right.
So you and your fucking troublemaker father, again,
absolutely true,
with this bullshit. I mean, but so I love the whole. So Michael K. Williams, the character, his character leads an occupy style peaceful sit-in,
right,
refusing to leave.
with your support, the homeless embark on a night-long struggle to occupy the library and remain sheltered from the cold, because a lot of people are dying outside in the cold. Anyway, but I love that it says, the film brings up a variety of contemporary issues, such as the use of police force, the tendency of media to sensationalize the news, and the issue of public spaces, how they should be used or not. But a lot of shit we're dealing with in Trump's America, right?
Yeah.
Fake news, media, this.
It's... And I think it's just sort of, it became more relevant, the story did, as Trump got elected in this last year, and as we're seeing this war on poor people. And that's exactly what it is. It's a war on, it's a war on poor people. It's a class war, and the film really details that. Sadly. It's where exactly where we find ourselves. In fact, just this last December, a homeless guy froze to death in a bus bench that I walk past every day when I'm in the city.
Yeah,
there in 2016, 80 people died on the streets of Portland. Portland.
Yeah,
where it gets cold.
I've seen the police rounding up homeless near me here. Like, you know, in terms of. I mean, it's such a prescient issue in terms of Trump's America. I mean, I was reading somebody's post, you know, about the Santa Barbara Film Festival, you know, college kid that went, that wrote this. You saw this amazing post about this.
She really got underneath the skin of the film and understood it
in
a granular way.
But I mean, talks about how the issue of homelessness feels closer than ever, because in Santa Barbara, all the fires and all the, you know, fire and mud and, you know, blah, blah, blah. As one character in the film points out, homelessness is only a job loss away. Perhaps it's because the festival was beginning as the loss is still hanging in the air as we're still navigating our way around roadblocks where streets were swept away. That the festival opener felt like church. Mm-hmm. But just an amazing sort of experience of the film, but also review. I love her. She says, this is one of my favorite films. The public feels old-fashioned in a good way, a touch of Jimmy Stewart, a moral tale without smugness or self-righteousness. Although the film is political, it's not cynical. When pastors appear, they're good people. You see the church, specifically the black church, making space for the homeless and defying the police to bring food and supplies into a standoff where violent tension has escalated beyond all reason. It seems like every issue of the Trump world in America crystallized into one. As to who are we as a country, as if you call yourself a Christian, right? All of it.
And when did calling yourself a liberal become a bad word?
Yeah.
Right. When did that become bastardized? And oh my God.
Yeah.
It's we're human.
Yeah.
And I think that our obligation, it's we have a moral imperative to look out for each other. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. I don't care what your religion is.
I've done Stations of the Cross with your dad downtown, you know, because he's, as you say, so Catholic.
He
really walks the talk as you do.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but when you use words like obligation, people say, I feel obligated, and it feels burdensome. But if you say moral obligation or moral imperative is like, okay, how do I disagree with that?
Yeah.
But I'm...
Yeah. No, I mean, I love this review. It's a film that also speaks perfectly to the moment. This is the dark side of America, one of the wealthiest nations on earth, where hundreds of people freeze to death every winter. And then there's the America where corrupt institutions, selfish individualism converge. Trump has made worse. A public prosecutor campaigning for the mayor calls for law and order, then manufactures fake news to help his cause. Mm-hmm. Heavy-handed police tactics turn a low-key protest into a life-or-death situation. A TV reporter is so obsessed with her Twitter following, she gets the story completely wrong. While glued to her smartphone, she misses the opportunity for multiple scoops. This is everything that got us to Trump's America today, right?
Indeed it is. Yeah.
So no wait.
I don't want to
can't talk about it, it's about to be
right. We're in the middle of putting together a deal.
Yeah,
we're to sell it, and for the film to enjoy a wide release and wide distribution, theatrical. So because I believe that the film is a shared experience, there are some films that should be go right to Netflix or right to VOD or right to the streaming platforms. This is a film that works in an audience. And there is the chant is make some noise, and you feel people galvanized towards a common goal. As you're sitting,
it's like,
in the theater,
it feels to me
like a movement,
like the resistance. It feels to me like the resistance.
It is
this,
that.
Like,
it is that.
For Christian Slater plays the douchebag,
wonderfully, by the way. Wonderfully.
He's the prosecutor, Law and Order. We can't set precedent. The library's not a homeless shelter. Blah blah blah. Alec Baldwin, a police negotiator, living with a loss that he's eating him alive, finds struggling to do the job that is expected of him. Mm. I love that it sounds like the characters are not just sort of black and white.
No.
They're kind of nuanced as people are.
Everybody's incredibly flawed. And during the course of the night, the flaws are revealed and the secrets are revealed about who they are and what they're struggling with. And it feels very real, and it feels, again, feels very relevant and timely.
Yeah. Let's talk about the most important part, that there are a couple of homages to Stephanie Miller in
there
the
are
film.
Indeed.
Let's talk about that. Let's bring this back to me. No, you just played them for me on your iPhone, and they're hilarious.
I did. There's a moment where Jenna Malone plays a couchtivist. She wants to be an activist, and she posts memes on her Facebook page, and she's like, you know, power to the people, and now confronted with this lockdown and confronted with police, she has a meltdown, and she confronts my character, and she says, this is. I can't do this. And I said, what are you talking about? This is totally within your wheelhouse. You're the one who's always like, vive la resistance.
Vive la resistance. Ha ha. Ha ha. Ennui, Emilio Estevez.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was the first one. The second one is when we were, we had to choose a ringtone for Jenna Malone's phone. Later in the film, she's being confronted by the police. And she's pushing back, and she says, you guys are, you know, violating my Fourth Amendment rights, and blah, blah, blah. And her phone rings, and of course, it's...
Hello?
Your mom wrote me this, and I almost plot. She's like, Emilio wants to meet you. He put a homage in his mouth. I was like, what is with you people? You're too nice. What is happening?
And there was some criticism from some of the people, some of the production people who said, you know, there's going to be maybe... four people that are going to get that. And I said, no.
The resistance
will
get it.
You don't watch Stephanie Miller.
The most important person will get it.
Yes, the only person that I care about who gets this will get this.
Oh, God. Mrs. Emilio Estevez.
She's just practicing her signature.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just signing things. Okay, can I just read a couple more things from this review because I love it? Although the film deals with heavy themes, it's not weighted down by them. There is humor and affection and humanity here. The characters may be drunkards.
That's another homage to
Stephanie. What? Stop it. Drug addicts, conspiracy theorists. Many of them struggle with mental illness. They also are elite readers and philosophers, veterans who fought for their country, former family men who paid their taxes before they lost it all. That is the whole... resistance summed up, isn't it?
It is.
It's all of us. It's, the film takes the very ordinariness of the setting and transforms it. Small characters become big. Those who are often treated as throwaway people demonstrate courage and thoughtfulness. There's a hardness here, but there's also hope. I like that the public lets its morals show. I like the hints of church in it, the hints of sentimentality edged with steel. I like that it is complicated characters who nevertheless do the right thing. In this era of fake news and cruel policy and narcissistic self-absorption, we do not need cynicism. We need uprightness. We need earnest truth-telling and people who take a stand for right. We also need the right amount of humor and self-deprecation so that we don't become judgy and smug. This is what the public does. I hope it becomes more widely available soon. And God bless.
Sincerely,
God bless the United States.
God bless the United States.
Our America. I mean, because...
I can't wait to see the whole film. And I'm deeply in love with you, Janet. Let's get this done, call me. I've been loving you since Breakfast Club, him since Mighty Ducks. It's, this has just been overwhelming. And we were just saying, if you stay here, because we're going to stop this whole moving to Ohio thing where you sold your house here and bought a house there. But if you crash here.
Yes. I mean. Well,
we're just saying, and you come down and you just comment when you want to on the morning show.
Breakfast Club jokes. Breakfast Club jokes every morning. It's Breakfast Club.
I bet you we could get Ally Sheedy here, and I'll be like my USC dorm again.
I think she lives in New York, so I think it'd have to be
okay,
a call.
Okay, whatever. We'll fucking figure it out. Emilio, don't arch my buzz.
Sorry.
How can we help you and support your film and help?
You're supporting it every day by being on the air. That's
support
truly.
Our marriage.
And you know, I think that it's so easy, and we, you know, this writer talked about this in the piece. It is so easy to be judgy and smug and cynical. But I think that we are all prisoners of hope.
Yep.
I'm not an optimist.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm a prisoner of hope. And I think that, you know, as you guys, you grind people's stones, but I think that you are also, you are prisoners of hope as well. And the work that you're doing here is really, really inspiring. And it's inspired me to keep the fight. And to want to continue making movies like
I'm
like
deeply, public, deeply so. In love. And I don't mean in any kind of higher way. I mean it in a really filthy way. I will show you now on the after party. Emilio Estevez.
What a thrill.
What an honor. But you know what? Upper chakras and lower chakras are all kind of... Okay. I love you.
I love you more.
Emilio Estevez.